Good afternoon and welcome to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. And this show is all about music and the people who make it. We're going to have some fun today. We've got some great rock and rollers joining us. That's right. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll have the legendary country rock hybrid artist. He's done it all. He's done gospel. He's done tributes. He's done country. He's done bluegrass. He's done everything. And, of course, he scored one of the biggest songs of all time in rock and roll with The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Talking about my old friend Charlie Daniels. Believe it or not, it has been 40 years, count them, 40 years since The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Came out as a single. It was off the album Million Mile Reflections, and that also happens to be celebrating its 40th anniversary as of April of this year. And on a personal note, it's kind of my 40th anniversary with Charlie, too. You see, I met Charlie at the Uptown Theater on that tour back in late 1979, early 1980. And we have done many, many interviews over the years. He has done so many wonderful things with his music. I had the opportunity to MC for him on a number of occasions. And he's going to be calling in here in about 10 minutes or so. So we're going to play some music and kind of refamiliarize yourself with this great singer-songwriter and, of course, fiddle player and guitar picker, Mr. Charlie Daniels. Let's go back to one of the early songs that first introduced us to Charlie. He was, back then, just a long-haired country boy, and you didn't want to mess with him. No siree. Charlie Daniels, coming up. Keep it here.
People say I'm no good and crazy as a loon, 'cause I get stoned in the morning and I get drunk in the afternoon. Kinda like my old blue tick hound, I like to lay around in the shade. And I ain't got no money, but I damn sure got it made, 'cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. Preacher man talking on TV, putting down the rock and roll, wants me to send a donation, 'cause he's worried about my soul. He said Jesus walked on the water, and I know that it's true, but sometimes I think that preacher man would like to do a little walking too. But I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone. At all, but I will take another toll. But I
it on my own. You don't like the way I'm living, you just leave this long-haired country boy alone.
He's a long-haired country boy, and he has made so many hits. Count them. Come on, count them. I dare you. Among them, Legend of Woolly Swamp, In America, Still in Saigon, Long-Haired Country Boy, which you just heard, Sal's Gonna Do It Again. He's done them all. And, of course, we're going to get to the one that is perhaps most closely linked to Charlie, one of the, if not the, first fiddle song to top the charts in rock and roll, and that is Devil Went Down to Georgia. Of course, it is celebrating its 40th year. I just can't get over the fact that that song has been around longer than my engineer, Jose. You're well under 40. Well under 40. And this song has been a big staple. It's one of those songs that has crossed genres. It has crossed generations. It's as popular today as it was when it first came out. We're going to talk to Charlie about the anniversary of that song, what was going on when he wrote it, and find out a little bit more. But you know what? Charlie's one of those artists that never seems to sit still. As I mentioned, I met Charlie 40 years ago on the Million Miles Reflections album tour, and that is the album that features the wonderful Devil Went Down to Georgia. So we're going to talk a little bit about the album anniversary as well, because that album had a little significance to it, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But one of the things about Charlie that is amazing is he has never stood still. He has never rested on his laurels. He continues to make great albums, great music. In fact, he's got a new group, a new album. CDB is still around. Don't let me scare the old fans there. Charlie Daniels Band is still alive and well, but he's also got a side project, you know, because you just can't slow the man down. It's called the Bo Weevils, and it features some of his old friends. We'll be talking about that as well, and featuring some songs from the new album that just came out a few months ago called Songs in the Key of E that is very much Charlie Daniels sounding, but a little bit different. It's a little swampier, maybe a little more gospely, a little more bluesy in some parts, and we're going to hear some cuts from it. But right now, let's continue on with the album we just featured. We gave you the Long-Haired Country Boy, which was one of the first songs that introduced me to Charlie as a fan back in 1974. And it was his last album for Kama Sutra Records before moving over to Epic Records, moving on up, as the Jeffersons would say. And it was recorded at Capricorn Studios in Macon, Georgia, which is why it's got such a great sound. This was the other single from it, and one that I just mentioned. This is off of Fire on the Mountain. It's South's Gonna Do It Again.
Tucker boys are cooking down in Carolina. People down in Florida can't be still when old Leonard Skinner's picking down in Jacksonville. People down in Georgia come from near and far to hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So get around, gather around, chill and get down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud to a river, because South's gonna do it again. And again. We'll
hay. He ain't good looking, but he sure can play. And there's CZ Top, and you can't forget that old brother Will is getting soaking wet. And all the good people down in Tennessee, you're digging Barefoot Jerry and CDB. Well, gather round, chill and get down. Well, you can get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can get loud, him, be proud. Well, you can be proud, him, be proud to a rebel, cause Si's gonna do it again. Yes, it is.
Devil Went Down to Georgia is 40 years old, believe it or not. But that song's even older. That's The South's Gonna Do It Again. And that goes back to 19... when was that song out there? That was 19... Gosh, I can't even remember. Early 70s. Let's just say that. It was early 70s. 74, maybe? Anyway, we've got Charlie Daniels joining us in just a bit. He is doing a series of interviews today, and we have a lot to talk to Charlie about. As I mentioned, I have interviewed Charlie over the four decades for a long, long time, and we're just having a good time talking with him over the years. One of the things that's interesting is Charlie never tends to rehash the past too much, but we are going to talk about the Devil Song in just a few minutes. So we're going to talk about his new books. Do you know Charlie writes books? That's true. He's got several out. He got a couple of new ones. Never Look at the Empty Seats, a memoir covering the 40-some years, 60-some years, I should say, of his career. And he's got some words of wisdom, and maybe we can get him to impart a couple of those wonderful life lessons that he's learned in just a few minutes. But first, let's play the song that is turning 40 years old. Where's the time gone? I gotta ask you. This is it, the one that topped the charts, the first fiddle song in rock history to break big as it did. Still as cool and current today as it was then, crossing genres, crossing generations. This is the CDB, and the Devil Went Down to Georgia. Charlie Daniels after this.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet and you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." Opened up his case and he said, "I'll start this show." And fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this.
Oh,
When the devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny does your dog bite, no child no. The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been. He played, fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. The chicken in the bread pan, I'm picking out dough. Granny, where you don't fight, no child, no.
FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Midwest Beat. I'm Tom Lounges, and this program is all about people that make music. And this guy has been making music for 6 decades, and that song alone, 4 decades this year. Devil went down to Georgia, topped the charts in country and rock. It's a genre-busting, generation-busting song that is as current today as it was then. And the man that created that song is with us right now, my old friend Charlie Daniels. Hey, Charlie, how are you?
Tom, how are you, buddy? It's good to talk to you.
I love talking with you. You know, we have talked. It's not only the 40th anniversary of that song and of the album Million Mile Reflections, but it's also my 40th anniversary of knowing and interviewing you. We met on that tour at Chicago's Uptown Theater.
I'll be doggone.
It's been a long time.
Wow, you know, it's a really, well, the part of it we live in anyway, the part you and me live in, is a small world. You keep meeting the same people year after year. I think everybody goes into this business loves it because they stay in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So many people stay in business like you have. We're talking 40 years. And I've been here 40-some. Well, actually, I've been here longer than that. But I'm the only guy older than me now left is Willie Nelson.
Yeah. And he's still going strong, too. The two of you are.
That's about it. You know, the rest of the old guys are gone.
Yeah,
so I'm the old patriarch now. I'm getting to be anyway.
It goes fast, doesn't it?
Oh, it does go. But you know what? It's been so much fun. I cannot complain about one day of my life. I mean, it's not saying I never had any tough times or any controversies or anything like that that made life a little bit difficult for a few days. But basically, it's all been wonderful. And I would trade lives with anybody.
You know what I love about you, Charlie, is the fact that you're constantly forward moving. You're constantly stretching the boundaries. You're always going somewhere new. You're not one of those that rests on laurels. I had said that earlier in the show today. You and I have talked probably 24 times, whether it's been for print or for radio. We've talked about you writing It Hurts Me for Elvis. We've talked about the last Christmas your mom had with the snow that fell for the Christmas special we did.
Uh-huh.
We have talked about so many things, and we never really rehashed the old stuff. And today I'm not going to rehash too much because you've got new things going on. You've got the new group, and again, as I warn my listeners, Charlie Daniels Band is still alive and well, but you have expanded to the Bow Weevils, which is a new group featuring some of the old CDB guys, and the Songs in the Key of E is the new album. We're going to play something from that. We've got two new books, Never Look at the Empty Seats, your memoir, and you've also given us a few words of wisdom, some lessons of life, a life well-lived, a life that has been very productive. So we want to talk about all of that with you. But first, since we did play Devil Went Down to Georgia, let's talk a bit about that. The song has crossed generations, has crossed genres. Did you ever expect that from the song? And it's kind of, in my interpretation, a retelling of the classic tale of bluesman Robert Johnson at the crossroads, only in this one, the devil doesn't win.
Well, of course, as you might imagine, I've been asked that a lot of times if I thought, had any idea what the song was going to do. The answer is absolutely not. thought that it would be a good song for us. I felt that we get some airplay off of it, and it would, you know, raise the recognition of the band to some degree. But no, I had no idea that 40 years after this thing had been released, that we'd be sitting here talking about it. It's as amazing to me as it is to anybody.
Do you recall when the notion for writing that song came about? As I said, it was the first time fiddle really topped the charts in rock and roll. It was a unique take, as I said, kind of on the Robert Johnson theme. It was just such a creative song. Where did the nugget, that the seed of that song come from? Can you recall?
Well, we had written and rehearsed an album's worth of material for an album called Million Mile Reflections. And we, for some odd reason, I don't know why, had not done a fiddle song. We had not written a fiddle song. We went into the studio and started recording and said, we don't have a fiddle song. I mean, like a bunch of idiots, because why we didn't figure it out before we went on. Anyway, we said, we've got to have a fiddle song. So we moved the equipment out of the recording studio into a rehearsal studio. And this, the only place that I know of that got me thinking in that direction, it was an old Stephen Vincent Benet poem I had in high school, called The Mountain Whippoorwill, which dealt with a fiddle contest, not between the devil and anybody, but just a fiddle contest. And for some odd reason or another, the line, "The devil went down to Georgia," was in my mind. I don't know where that came from. But we went in a rehearsal studio, and I said, guys, I got this idea. You play this, you play that. Let's get to start something here. And we kind of went on from there, and it just, Cass came up with that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, we just started putting these pieces together, and I went off and finished the lyrics to it, came back, we went and recorded it. It was that, I guess you could say, it was the mother of invention, necessity, that got us to write that song. And it was just the right time and the right mood, the right atmosphere, the right frame of mind for me to write that tune. Other than that, I really don't know.
Okay. One of the things that we've talked about in the past, too, is how you started your career doing session work, and one of the more famous sessions was working with Bob Dylan, but that was as a guitar player. You are primarily known because of that song, Devil Went Down to Georgia, as a fiddle player these days. When people say Charlie Daniels, the first thing they think of is the fiddle.
Always. Yeah.
Is that?
Well, that's natural. That's pretty natural, really, though. You know, you get right down to it, because that's the song that they know, and that's sometimes, you know, that's the only song some people know of ours, is that went down to Georgia, if they're not versed in, you know, our kind of music or country music or whatever. So I'm not surprised at that. But I played guitar before I played fiddle. I started playing guitar first.
Right.
And I still spend about two-thirds of it on guitar now when we play.
Well, Devil came out, as you mentioned, A Million Mile Reflections in 1979, but your first hit was Uneasy Rider, and that was 6 years earlier off Honey in the Rock.
Yeah, 1973.
Was that three? Yeah, 73, 74.
Yeah.
So Devil was the song that actually put you over the top. It was your breakthrough. You had some bubbling under hits. You had a name. You were touring. You were on the big leagues, but you hadn't quite crossed over to the arena level yet. Devil did that for you. Ten albums into your career. Today, a newer artist wouldn't get 10 albums to break through. They get one, and they better hope for, you know, a hit out of the ballpark.
That was the wonderful thing about the music business when it was run by music people, as opposed to being run by strictly by lawyers now and bean counters. There were people who actually, Ronald Lexenberg signed me to Epic Records, and he said, you will make hit records for us. You may not do it on your first album. You may not do it on your second album. You may, you know, maybe a third or fourth album before you do. But he signed me to make 6 albums for Epic Records. A concrete contract for 6 albums. So I had 6 shots at it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the third album we did when it actually popped for us. So that was the thing. Had he not had that commitment, I mean, that if I had signed with a label that it was one and done, you know, it would never have happened.
Right.
But that was a wonderful thing about the music business when it was run by people who really, really knew and really cared about the music.
Million Mile Reflections was the term reflections was it was a reflective tribute back to a lot of those folks. As you mentioned, you're one of the last ones standing. But even back then, we had lost so many. Elvis, who you had worked with, Janis Joplin, Ronnie had just passed from Lynyrd Skynyrd about a year and a half earlier when you were recording this. Do you think that the fact that it was a tip of the hat to all these great legends is one of the reasons that fans embraced it perhaps more than past albums?
Well, the song Reflections was a tribute to Ronnie Van Zant and Elvis Presley and Janis Joplin. That was it was never a big radio hit or anything, but it was, everybody knew that song. You know, everybody bought the album through the song. And it had a lot of meaning to, you know, to the people that loved those artists. I mean, and people did really love those artists. So it was another song on the album that people really liked. And I think that it did, I think it had some, you know, some importance in the album and its being a success. Of course, The Devil Led the Way, but but there were some other really good songs on that album. So that was one of them. It's kind of an introspective sort of song. I have literally been reduced to tears when I've done that song on stage. When I get to the part about Ronnie Van Zant, because he was a dear friend of mine, and it was, you know, thinking about him going, and it's an emotional tune to me, and I think it was to quite a few people.
A lot of your friends used to gather with the volunteer jams, and we talked the year of your 80th birthday a couple of years ago, and you had resurrected the volunteer jams to help the Wounded Warriors, I think it was, in Nashville. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
Are you going to be doing any more of those?
Yeah, we'll do them. You know, what the deal was, Tom, when we did those things, we started them out. It started out as a live recording session in 1974. We were going to do two live cuts on the Fire on the Mountain album, actually. And we scheduled a small hall, War Memorial Auditorium, about a 2,200-seat hall in Nashville. And we called it the Volunteer Jam because the Volunteer State of Tennessee, it sold out pretty quick, so we broadcast it live. It was on the radio. And I casually invited some friends, some of the Tucker boys, the Parson Tucker guys, and Dickie Betts was in town. And the Allman Brothers and the Marshall Tucker Band were the hottest firecracker in Tennessee and Nashville area at that time. And for some reason, I didn't tell anybody they were there. We never advertised them. They just were there and backstage. And when we got through recording, we started a jam, and I called them out, and the place went nuts. I mean, like, here you are sitting here, and it's a CDB doing their stuff, and all of a sudden, two of your very favorite artists in the world are brought out on stage. And you knew nothing about them even being in the state. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of took on a life of its own, like, hey, what have we done here? I've experienced a few things in my life that did that. This was definitely one of them. So we said, we got to do this again. So we scheduled it in a 13,000-seat hall the next year and sold it out. And we just kept doing it up until the time that it got to the problem. Now, you got to remember, this is back before Band-Aid, Kool-Aid, and this aid, and that aid, and all the different big shows that people put together. And it was not that hard to attract a meaningful roster of artists because that weren't that many places, you know, that people played. And it got, as time went on, and people got so many invitations and got so busy, it was really hard to get a meaningful roster of artists. So what we do now, we cut it back until we reach a year where we can get a real meaningful roster of artists. And okay, we do it on those years. So that's what actually decides it, and more so than any chronological thing at all, would be that, hey, we got, a bunch of people last year. Well, I won't even go into who all it was, but it's kind of determined by how many good artists we can get to be on it.
Is another one in the works yet, or are you still waiting to see who's available?
It's not actually in the works. It's not, I mean, we have not planned a date or anything, but there's a promoter in Nashville that loves doing these things, and he's always up for doing one. So we can pretty much, at any time that we can get commitments from three or four, you know, good artists, because we set the bar pretty high here, actually. You know, we've had Garth Brooks, we've had the Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd, and we've had all the Southern bands, we've had James Brown, we've had Woody Herman's big band one time.
Didn't know that.
Oh yeah, we've had everybody. We had classical violinist one time, Eugene Fodor. We've had, you know, so many people. We set the bar pretty high, so it can't just be a jam. It needs to be a jam with some, you know, some well-known artists there. So, at any time we can get three or four good artists to join us, we'll do another one. That could be, could possibly be later this year, could be next year, but we do definitely plan on doing some more.
You were one of the first to perform and break this new genre at the time, Southern Rock. There was country rock with the Eagles and the Rick Nelson Stone Canyon Band, but you brought a lot more of that guitar assault along with the Outlaws and Skynyrd and Marshall Tucker. What is your thoughts on the state of Southern Rock today? And I ask because we've got a couple of young guns out there like Blackberry Smoke and Devin Allman and Dwayne Betts. Their little coalition is really starting to get attention. What are your thoughts as an elder statesman of Southern Rock of the state of the music you helped pioneer?
Well, I think that it's still very much in evidence. If you turn on, if you listen to country radio very long, you'll hear a lot of it. You'll hear elements of it. You won't hear the music. You won't hear, because I can't tell one song from the other on country radio anymore, to be honest with you about it. But you hear Dwayne Allman's slide guitar, you know, you hear the guitar sounds like all the bands used. You hear elements of what was known as Southern Rock in a lot of music, and a lot of especially country music nowadays. It's kind of come to that point. I think that it is still basically, you know what, if you look at all of those bands were different, but they all had an element of something that they all shared in common. And every band was a good musical band. They were all jam bands. Southern bands were jamming long before this thing jam band came up with. And I think it's still there. We're still doing the same thing. We still play shows with Marshall Tucker. We still play shows with Leonard Skynyrd. Unfortunately, in fact, we're playing with Allman and Betts here a couple of weeks. We're doing some days with them a little later on in the year. But it's enjoyable. And the thing about it is when people come to see a show with a couple of those bands on it, it's like, you know, from start to finish, you're sitting there enjoying yourself. There's never a dull moment. The music is, you know, the music is something to be enjoyed from the first note to the last. It's something that keeps you up. And even when, you know, and it's just good, solid American music. And I think the music itself, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of guys that played it. But the music itself, as far as the sound's concerned, I don't think it'll ever go away.
Well, you have something brand new I want to talk about, and that is the Bo Weevils. Now, are you touring at all with that lineup? Or I know CDB is still around and on the road a lot, but are you doing any dates with the Bo Weevils? And we'll introduce the fans to that.
No, that's a one-off thing. That's basically a recording thing that we did. This is a culmination of myself and a drummer in Nashville by the name of James Stroud, who used to produce my records. He did some of our best country records. But he's also a great drummer, and I always wanted to do a project with him, and he wanted to do one with me. We always wanted to play together in the studio, but we had no vehicle. We had no tunes. I started writing these songs, and I said, this is it right here. James, what do you think? He said, yeah. So we got Charlie Hayward, my bass player, and in my opinion, one of the finest slide guitar players in the country, Billy Crane, who's the brother of Tommy Crane, who played with me for 14 years or so. And we went to the studio and spent a few days and just cut this record. It was fun. It was just a fun album. It's not perfect. There's some mistakes. There's this, that on it, but it's got a natural feel to it. It sounds like a jam album. It just sounds like a bunch of guys playing together in the studio. And the songs, as I wrote them, all lent themselves to being sung in the key of E. So I said, well, I'll just call the album Songs in the Key of E. And that's how the name came about. But it's a one-off sort of thing, you know. It's just one of those projects we do, and it was fun. I would like to see it do well enough to do another record, because it was just really fun creating music together. together in the studio with guys like that.
All right, let's give the listeners about a minute or so of one of my favorite tracks off this, Geechee Geechee Ya Ya Blues. We'll play about a minute or so. We'll get back to talking with Charlie and find out more about the Bo Weevils. New music, Charlie Daniels with the Bo Weevils off Songs in the Key of E. Giving you a little sample there, wetting your whistle. Geechee, Geechee, Ya Ya Blues. And I really hate it when there's a spider in my gumbo, Charlie.
I have no idea what that means, Geechee, Geechee, Ya Ya Blues. I heard there used to be a thing called Sitting in La La Looking at My Ya Ya.
I remember that.
The clown.
Was that Jimmy? It was Dorsey. Lee Dorsey did that. Lee Dorsey.
You're right. I think it was you that. I think that part of that line, I thought, well, yet La-La, Lake Charles, Louisiana, I don't know. But Geechee Geechee, I mean, it just came into mind. I don't know what it means, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Dylan song. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
But you like it, exactly. Well, the sound on the Bo Weevils is very Charlie Daniels, but it's also so removed from some of the Charlie Daniels stuff. You've got elements of the swamp rock, the blues, a little bit of funk in there. There's even a gospel kind of tinge to it, and all done with a strong southern edge. Are you going to be doing the songs from this with the CDB, since you're not going to tour with the Bo Weevils?
I do a couple of songs off of it. Yeah, we've been doing, we were doing a song on there called Mexico Again. I've been doing a song on there called How We Roll.
Good song.
And I do a song, you know, it depends on how long a set I have. But I used to do a song off of it every night.
Okay. How often are you touring right now? Are you on the road at this point? Are you doing a tour?
I am in Kearney, Nebraska, as I talked to you. We're here tonight. We'll be in Independence, Kansas tomorrow. We were in Sioux City, Iowa last night, played three songs, and the lightning storm came up, so we weren't able to finish the show. So anyway, but yeah, that happens this time of the year, especially in this part of the country. They've had some rough weather out this way. But
yeah, we've had it here in the Midwest. We've had it pretty rough, too.
We got blue skies and everything's looking good today. So, but yeah, to answer your question, yeah, we're on the road a lot. We go into the shank of our year here in June. We really start staying out longer times. And we do about 110 to 115 days this year.
That's a lot of time on the road, and you've been doing it for so long. What keeps it exciting for you? Why continue to do this at a point in your career when you could take it easy and put your feet up on the front porch?
I love what I do. I am addicted to entertaining people. I'm like an old racehorse in the gate when I'm standing in the wings of the stage at night listening to my Kurt music play. I'm ready to go out there and play my music to these people. That's what I love. What I have devoted over 60 years of my life to and what I thoroughly enjoy doing. And I'm healthy enough to do it. God has blessed me with good health, with good people to work with me. I get well taken care of, and my folks are very efficient. I've got people who've been with me 40 years, and we just got it down to a routine. And I get off the bus every night, go and do my meet and greet, go on stage, do my show, get off, get back on the bus, and go to another town and do it again. You know, and all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed by somebody else. I've got a bunch of people that take care of everything. Everything's done when I get there. All the equipment's took care of. The sound checking is taken care of. All I have to do is play my music and sing my song. So it's a pretty nice way to live, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. It sounds like it. You know, the last few times we talked, you were seemingly checking off items on your bucket list. You did the Bob Dylan tribute, Off the Grid, doing it Dylan. You did Nighthawk, which was your tribute to the old cowboy singers in the Old West. You've done gospel albums. You've done straight fiddle albums. What's next? What's left on the bucket list, musically speaking, that you'd like to do?
Well, there's quite a few things. I'm involved right now. I want to. I got an epic gospel song, but a pretty heavy duty gospel song. When I say that, I'm talking about arrangements with chords. I mean strings and choirs and all that kind of thing that I'm working on right now. That I'm want to get finished up. I want to do it in my church a service. Start with the first thing, and I've got bits and pieces of stuff coming in my mind. I've kept bits and pieces of songs in my mind for as long as 14 years. And I'd sit down once in a while, I'll take my guitar and I'll start trying to, you know, but I'm always doing something. I got a thing the other day. David Hasselhoff is doing a record. He wanted to do a fiddle part on it.
Wow.
I did a fiddle part on it and sent it back. And you know, it's like I've got, well, all these dates to do with the guys, I'm always always on there looking out for another good song that comes to me. And, you know, God's good to me. I'm doing what I want to do and loving every minute of it.
Trying to see you and David Hasselhoff working together is kind of blowing my mind. Of course, you'll be big in Japan.
He was not in the studio when I did it. They just sent me the tape, and I took it in my studio and did it. But, you know, the point being, I'm always doing something. I'm always doing one thing or another. I just did a thing for Tennessee Wildlife. It's a public service announcement for Tennessee Wildlife here a while back. I'm always doing, there's always something going on. Something going on in the studio, or I'm writing another book, or I just got through with a novel that I've been writing. I got some more stuff to do on it. But I hadn't been bored, and I couldn't tell you how long. Because I've always got something to do that I love. And that's, you know, one of the biggest fallacies to me in America, of course, it's not as much now as it used to be. But the mandatory 65 retirement.
Oh, I'm losing you.
People get there you go. But the mandatory 65 retirement age, when people have just put in 40 years or 50 years or whatever of doing the same thing, and have just really found out how to push all the buttons. They know where the skeletons are buried. They know where the pitfalls are, where the landmines are. They know where the good things are. They know how to get there. They know the way there and the way back down again. And some guy comes up and says, well, you're 65. Here's a gold watch. Go home.
Right.
You people got a lot of good years left at 65. And I think that some of the – and now if you want to retire 65 and go play golf or something, that's great. I'm not knocking that at all. You've earned it. Go do it. But for me – 65 passed about 17 years ago for me, and I've had very, very productive years since then. I've made records, I've played shows, I've done television, I've been inducted in the Grand Ole Opry and the Country Music Hall of Fame, and I've some of the most meaningful things in my life that's happened to me after I reached into my 70s. So I think it's a waste a lot of times to make people mandatory 65 retirement. I think it's a waste.
And a lot of that is covered in your memoir, which came out about a year or two ago, Never Look at the Empty Seats. What was it like sitting down and dredging up all those memories? And how did you keep them documented? Did you keep journals on the road? I mean, it's very well written.
Not really, but I wrote this book over a period of probably 20 years.
Okay.
I write parts of it. And the thing about it is, once you start thinking about certain things that elicits other memories start popping in your mind, you know, about, well, I remember this happened back then too. And so I just kept putting them down. The hardest, I got a chapter on my faith, and it was that was the hardest chapter for me to write, because I knew what I wanted to say, but I wanted to make sure everybody else knew what I was talking about. Other than that, I sailed on through it. Heck, it took me 20 years, but, I kind of went on through it and, you know, just documenting my feelings words and the way I feel about it and try to put it down in my vernacular as to the way I would talk if I was relating it to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just a, it was kind of a fun thing, especially after I got far enough along that I knew I was over the hump and I had it, you know, I was ready to, I was going to have a book there. It was a pretty nice feeling.
Okay, how's that gone? Has everybody been accepting? Were there any skeletons in the closet that you rattled when you put that out?
No, it was not that kind of book, actually. I was just telling my story, and, you know, it was like, I always wanted people, I talked about me and the people that I knew and the situations I had been through and that sort of thing, and, you know, anything story that I knew about somebody or something, I didn't put that down. That's not what it was about.
Okay. Another
There's
book.
Enough of those things now.
That's true. We live in that society where it's a shock thing.
Yeah.
You have written a book. You have taken the lessons you've learned in your 80-plus years, and you've put them down, words of wisdom, called Let's Make Every Day Count. And what I want people to read the book, so I don't want you to give it away, but can you wet our whistle so that they want to purchase the book by giving us a single piece of sage advice, a single life lesson that you feel could benefit my listeners?
Well, I start off every day as 100 pieces, if you will. I start off everyone with the Bible verse. I go into, I relate a situation that I was in and how I handled it, or just different sorts of scenarios. And I ended up with something that I feel like is that's divinely inspired. I don't worry about what I put one of these down every day, 365 days a year on my website. I mean, on my Twitter site. And I never worry about what I'm going to say. It seems like the good Lord sends me something. But I'll say something like, this one I didn't write. It's like I got somebody else, but like the man that gets what he wants is successful. The man who wants what he gets is happy. Let's all make the day count.
Hmm.
Or, you know, or something like that. Some little wisdom thing. And most of them, once in a while, I'll get one like that that I'd heard. Well, most of them, I do them on my own. And okay. Good Lord sends it to me. And I put them down. I do 365 of them a year.
Wow.
And, we go from there, but it's like a kind of a book, like, here's a place I made a misstep, you know, like, beat my head against the wall. You don't need to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how it works. Or here's something I didn't do that I should. I talk about opportunity, you know, opportunity knocks but once, and then moves on, you know. It doesn't stay around. It ain't going to knock your door down. And you got to be able to recognize it when you hear it. And we've all taken advantage of the opportunity, and we've all let opportunity slip by us. And it's just a matter of, like, when a guy called me and asked if I wanted to move to Nashville, you know, all I said is, I got to ask my wife about it. I knew what I wanted to do. It took her about 30 seconds to figure it out. And it would, but it, we, I could have just seized it and said, what am I going to do in Nashville? It's the most competitive music town in the world. You know, what am I going to do there? I have to start all over again. I was 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could have bypassed it, but I felt that this is the opportunity I've been waiting for, and it turned out to be. So those sorts of things, those sorts of little things where you kind of dealing with the subtleties of life and about attitudes and about, you know, about being honest with people and being fair with people and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned wanting to record a gospel song at your church. Is that for a single or a full album? What is the next recording project? Is it going to be a full-length album, and when would that be expected?
Well, I don't know yet. I mean, this one song I'm writing on, I'm just kind of envisioning it, doing it at my church. I haven't really gotten past the point where I want to put anything else with it or whatever. We'll kind of see what it's like after I get finished with it.
Okay.
And see if it's worthy of that doing. But I am apt to go... I could tomorrow get an idea and say, hey, I want to go in and do a... I almost did a tribute album to Leonard Cohen a while back.
Ooh.
I already started picking out songs and stuff. Another project come along that fascinated me more, actually. But I could at any time decide, you know, I think I will do that.
Okay.
I think I'll do a Leonard Cohen tribute album and go and start picking songs and go in and do... Of course, it won't sound like Leonard Cohen doing
right,
it.
Right, right.
CDB doing underground. I worked with Leonard for a while.
He was a gifted songwriter.
He was very much so, and he was a totally different sort of songwriter. He was just, I learned a lot from Leonard. I was exposed to a kind of music that I'd never been around before. You know, I came out of 13 years bang slamming in rock and roll clubs and stuff, you know, and playing dance music and stuff. And went on a road with Leonard Cohen and played acoustical music and got to appreciating the subtleties of the turn of a phrase or something. You're sitting there thinking, isn't that beautiful? Or maybe you're thinking, what does he mean by that?
Mm-hmm. You know?
But it's thought-provoking. That's the thing. That's the thing about Dylan music. It's thought-provoking.
You did such a good job on that Dylan tribute, Off the Grid. That was just, I mean, so many people have covered Dylan, and you brought a new everything to it, a new feel, a new groove. Your fingerprints on his music really worked well. I was very, very happy with that album. It's one of my favorites.
I wanted to do Dylan music, but I wanted to do it like as if I had written it really neat. In other words, we went in like it was a whole other song. Of course, we used his chords, and we used a few of the things we kept familiar, but basically I didn't want to go in and try to do a Bob Dylan copy. I wanted to do CDB does Bob Dylan, and CDB does it in their own way, and I think we accomplished that.
Mm-hmm. Did Bob give you any feedback on it? I'm sure he's heard it by now.
Yeah, I'm sure he's heard it. Not really. I mean, he's just not that kind of, I've talked to him. He didn't talk about the album. He talked about, he told me he had 19 grandchildren. But you know, and he's not the kind of guy who goes, "Hey, what do you think about the album? My album, your music that I did." You know, I wouldn't want to do that. I figure if he wants me to know, he'll tell me. But it was pretty well received. People seemed to. It didn't offend Dylan fans. You know, it didn't take we didn't take enough Dylan out of it where it would offend Dylan. Some of Dylan fans are very much purists.
Right.
You know, they were such purists they didn't want him playing with a band and when he playing with his guitar all the time. And I mean, just him and his guitar, which was pretty mournful sound when you get right down to it, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He needed some drums and some bass and stuff. But we didn't really offend anybody, I don't think. And people seemed to like it. And probably some of the people probably seriously listened. Somebody told me it's the first time he could understand all the lyrics on Bob's.
You know, that's true. That is true.
So, I don't know. But it was a fun thing to do, and it was a tribute to Dylan. He was a big part of my career. Him using me on three albums and putting my name on the back gave me a recognition that I would have had to work years to have ever gotten, because he's the kind of artist that people want to know about him. And it literally turned the best. I'm talking about in the old 33 days when you had enough room to put out liner notes on.
Mm-hmm.
They literally read the liner notes. They literally cared about who played with him, who played what on what, and that sort of thing. And it gave me, not instant, but a pretty fast recognition, a lot more recognition, and a lot more respect, actually, because there was a certain amount of respect to being playing on a Dylan album.
Right.
So he did a lot for me, and it truly is a tribute out from him. And I've always loved his work. I love Bob Dylan.
One of the things that is a tradition here for me in radio and wherever I'm at, and we're going to be doing it on Memorial Day, is playing your version of Red Skelton's Pledge of Allegiance. And it's a tribute not only to Red, but to the state of Indiana, because he, of course, is from Vincennes, and we're not far from Vincennes right now. Your patriotism is something I just want to touch on briefly. For those that maybe haven't experienced Charlie Daniels beyond Devil Went Down to Georgia, you have written some incredible songs over the years, American Farmer, Still in Saigon, In America. I mean, you've done the Star Spangled Banner. You've done Pledge of Allegiance. You have always worn your flag and your spirit on your sleeve. And I just think that's very respectful in today's market. I just wanted to acknowledge that to people as
we
enter Memorial Day and 4th of July coming up.
Well, my patriotism comes from a long time ago. I was born in 1936. And of course, I'm 5 years old when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And I'm from Wilmington, North Carolina. And in the days before satellite technology and television and that sort of thing, we had a shipyard there, and we were a port city where war goods were shipped across the ocean from our port city, and ship sunk just off our coast by a German submarine. So we never knew what the Germans might try to bring to war on shore. But all that time, I grew up from the years I was baptized, about 10 during the Second World War. But we're very vigilant. But we always knew that between us and our enemy, there was a military out there.
Mm-hmm.
That there was the men and women, that, mostly men at that time, that were out there they had to come through them to get to us. People who laid their lives on the line for you like that, you've got to have a great respect for. And they, to lay their lives on the line, have to have a great respect for this country and a great love for this country, and that's called patriotism. And I was exposed to a lot of it when I was a kid, and it stuck with me all through these years. And I believe in all my heart that America's the greatest country that the world has ever known. And I believe that we are special. I believe that we are exceptional. I believe that we are opportunities and things here that you don't get anywhere. Freedoms and opportunities here, mm-hmm. you don't get anywhere else. And that's something to be patriotic about. It's something worth protecting. It's something worth fighting for if you have to.
You echo that thought in one of the new songs from the Bow Weevils and How We Roll. You had mentioned that earlier, and I want to play that as we get ready to say goodbye. Is there anything, Charlie, before I do that, that we have not talked about that you'd want to let people know?
One song on Bow Weevils, since you mentioned Robert Johnson, one song on Bow Weevils that I'd like to draw your attention to is a song called Mud Cat.
Got it.
That turns that story upside down a little bit. It kind of expands on the Robert Johnson's Crossroads story. And if you're familiar with that, you probably enjoy that song.
Definitely. Well, we will play that one. And then afterwards, for the listeners, I'm going to play How We Roll, and we may get to a couple others before we say goodbye. Stuart Copeland of the Police is coming up shortly. But, Charlie, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I thank you and Paula in your office for making time for me today.
Well, we thank you for making time for us. Let's do it again.
I will. We'll do it again.
We'll catch up again here in a few months, okay?
All right. This is Mudcat. It's off Bow Weevils, Songs in the Key of E, Charlie Daniels and Friends. Charlie, travel safe.
Thank you, my friend. God bless.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Down along the river by the big sandbar. A mudcat was so mad, played the devil blues on a slide guitar. He set out on the front porch of his shack way back in the middle of the Longleaf Pines, with a beat up Stella guitar and a half a gallon of homemade wine. He could make a guitar crawl, he could make a guitar fly, he could make you wanna dance, or he could make you wanna cry when he played. He used to run with Robert Johnson. That's how he learned to play the blues. The only time he'd ever talk about it was after he'd had him a drink or two. He said, we rambled this here contract, playing every old funky kind of backwood juke. From Sweet Home, Chicago to California, back on down to Baton Rouge. And it was one time around midnight when the moon was going down, we was walking past this crossroads near this little Mississippi town. I heard someone walking behind me, and when I turned around, something come floating up out of the swamp.
Then my knees started knocking and my hat fell off. And then fire started popping up by the ground. Something in the trees going round and round. Felt an ice cold hand swipe across my face. Something grabbed a hold of my guitar case. Something terrible started screaming way back in the woods. I took off a run just fast as I could. There's big things bumping, little things jumping. A light coming round the bend. I cried, Lord Jesus, get me out of here. And I ain't ever coming back again. And then you get this faraway look. And that's where the story would always end. The only other thing you'd ever say about it was you never did see Robert Johnson again. Well, the old man died a few years ago, and the note he wrote was the last thing he ever did. He said, my heart belongs to Jesus, but give my guitar to the kid. My cabin in the pines with a beat up Stella guitar and a half a gallon of wine I play. Some nights when I'm hitting the licks and there's a full moon shining down across the woods and the breeze smells like swamp water, I can almost hear that old man say, some come from up by the swamp. And then my knees started knocking and my hat fell off. And then fire started popping up by the ground. Something in the trees going round and round. Felt an ice cold hand swipe across my face. Somebody grabbed my guitar case. Something terrible started screaming way back in the woods. I took off a running just fast as I could. There's big things bumping, little things jumping. A light coming round the bend. I cried, Lord Jesus, get me out of here. I ain't ever coming back again. And it never did.
Cat, new music, Charlie Daniels, done with the Bow Weevils. And what a great band. Sadly, they're not going to tour, but that's a great studio project. And Charlie had mentioned that he'd love to see something happen with that again. It was planned as a one-off, but maybe we'll get more out of those guys. Maybe it'd be pretty cool. Charlie Hayward on bass, Billy Crane on guitar, James Stroud on drums, Charlie, of course, on vocals, guitar, and violin, fiddle. Probably slap me if I said violin. It's a fiddle, darn it. Charlie Daniels, what a great guy. Love talking to him. One of my favorite artists of all time to ever talk with or even hang with. I've had the opportunity, as I mentioned a couple of times, to MC shows for him, and he's always been so hospitable. It's always like, come on the tour bus, have a soda, hang out. He's always signed stuff for my animals for our Pet Rock event every year to help out the Humane Society of Northwest Indiana. One of those I can count on each and every year to send something, whether it's a signed T-shirt. One time he sent us a fiddle bow that he had played at the Grand Ole Opry and signed. I mean, he has just been so generous to our charity with the Humane Society of Northwest Indiana. And as I wanted to point out to a lot of my listeners, he's also given so much from the heart and soul for our troops throughout the years. He's traveled overseas to war zones. He's done a lot of fundraisers with the Volunteer Jam for the Wounded Warriors and different projects like that. So God bless Charlie Daniels, 82 years young and still kicking butt. That was a great song. Let's play another one before we get to Stuart Copeland of The Police. He'll be joining us momentarily to talk about Everyone Stares, The Police Inside Out, a DVD, Blu-ray documentary that is coming out next week, I believe. We'll find out more about that in a bit. Charlie had mentioned that this one's getting some airplay, and it's one that he does in concerts. So if you're going to see him anytime soon this summer, he'll be coming to Wisconsin, Michigan, and places like that, Illinois. I don't think he's got a date here in Indiana booked yet, but we can keep our fingers crossed. This is our final Charlie Daniels song. Again, this is off the Songs in the Key of E, the Bo Weevils, and listen to the words. It kind of underscores what we talked about at the end there about what a great country this is, and share some of his thoughts on it. This is How We Roll, and we're going to roll into it now.
As a bale of hay, and I don't care who knows it. I'm as redneck as a rodeo. My disposition shows it. I got a tricked out four by four that'll flat blow off your doors. And I like cornbread. I like clinging to my garden guns. Just to be emphatic, I'm a NASCAR racing maniac and a Tennessee Vols fanatic. I like Merlin, George, and Hank, and you take that to the bank and tell them what I see. Now I can tell by looking you're a smarter man than me, but I don't care about your education. I ain't impressed with your degrees. And if things start going wrong, just like that old country song, I think you better leave this long-haired country boy alone. And don't you give me no limp, 'cause you might get careless and you might let something slip. And I might just twist off and lose control, 'cause I'm a country boy and that's just how we roll. Well, America's the greatest. We just got so much to give here. And I don't blame nobody else who wants to come and live here. And as far as I'm concerned, just get in line and wait your turn. Come on down and get you some. Well, welcome to America. I'm so glad you could arrange it. We like it just the way it is, so don't go trying to change it. If you can't eat and sleep and breathe it, if you don't love it, you can leave it. Go back where you come from. And don't you give me no lip, 'cause you might get careless and you might let something slip. And I might just twist off and lose control, 'cause I'm a country boy and that's just how we roll. And you might let something slip, and I might just twist off and lose control, 'cause I'm a country boy and that's just how we roll. That's just how we roll.
The Bo Weevils, Songs in the Key of E, and that's how we roll, and that's how he rolls, Charlie Daniels. Thanks to Charlie, and again, thanks to Paula Zygas from his office. Paula has been with Charlie, at least 40 years, because I think it was Paula that set me up the first time with Charlie back when Million Mile Reflections came out so many, many years ago. I was just showing Jose here on my Facebook page. There's a collage of pictures of Charlie and I over the years from the different shows I emceed for him. And we look very, very young, full head of hair, thin, and then we show our gray in the last picture. So a lot of years spent with him. Well, a lot of great music as well.